This episode is sponsored by Sneaker Creatures. Sneaker Creatures is your one-stop shop for all of your sneaker needs, and man, do they have a big selection of shoes. If you're looking for Nikes or Jordans, those are super hot right now, and they have them at such incredible prices. If you're looking to gift Nikes or Jordans this year, then really, really check out sneakercreatures.com. You could use my promo code NICKLUGO, I repeat, N-I-C-K-L-U-G-O at checkout, and get a 10% discount on your purchase. Any shoe in the store, you will get a discount. Check it out, sneakercreatures.com. I repeat, sneakercreatures.com. Check out the link in the description below. It will be there. And now, on with the show. Hello and welcome back to the Nick Lugo Show. This is a continuation. This is part two of my conversation with Nathaniel Garrett Novosel. This was an incredible conversation. Part one was so good that we just wanted part two. And this is really a question of the meaning of life and really how we should act given this meaning of life. And well, he wrote a book called The Meaning of Life. So he's pretty, set to talk about this topic, and we really dug into it. We dug into, well, really the question of, are we in control? Do we even make these decisions? And you know what? Should we even make those decisions? It's a question that I've been trying to get an answer for so long, and I think I actually did by the end of this. So enjoy. This is part two of my conversation with Nathaniel Garrett Novosel. Oh, God. Well, thank you for doing this. Man, that was incredible. That was great. That was wonderful. Well,
no one's ever just come right at me. I've had I've gotten a lot of people coming at me. The last one I did just a few days ago, it's not up yet. She said, "What if you're growing and not finding meaning?" And I'm just like, shit, that's a good question. But fortunately, I had an answer. So it's like, no one's ever asked me that before. And I said, well, you know, there are three things, right? There's, and by the way, if you have like bonus footage, we could do this for a bonus thing, but sure. if you have subscribers on Patreon or something, the answer to what if you're growing and not finding meaning is that's why you need the other seven things. That's why growth in and of itself is not the only answer. And I said, there are three reasons why that might be happening. Number one is you're growing in something you don't care about, right? You don't want, so it's a lack of desire. You're making the wrong choices, whatever it is. So you're not growing something meaningful to you, because you could learn to, you can learn to do finger curls 1,000 times and you can do 1,001 tomorrow and it doesn't matter. Who cares? Like, that's weird. So like, no one's going to do that. So that's not a meaningful form of growth. So you need to use the other ones to direct yourself in the growth that's meaningful to you. But then the two other ones I said, one I said on the podcast, which was that if you lift weights, it's not about burnout. It's not about doing more. Growth is not about do. It's a doing and then resting and then recuperating and there's sleep. And there's all this other stuff.
Yeah, enjoying it's more the human thing. Than that. Yeah,
yeah. And then the third one was, you might not be growing in an area. Let me rephrase that. You might be growing in an area that other people told you to because they thought that you would find fulfillment from it, but you're not. And I got to be honest with you, that's my number one. That's one of the main reasons why I wrote the book. I have a bunch of main reasons apparently, but this one, it kills me because I lived my entire life growing up. I jokingly call it perfect child syndrome, right? Yeah. And what I mean by that is that my single mother, she had a job she really hated. She came home looking exhausted. We ate a lot of McDonald's because she didn't want to cook. I don't blame her. I actually love McDonald's, but I grew up on it. So I'm really appreciative that McDonald's exists. And I was poor, so I'm really, really, really glad McDonald's exists. But I would try to be perfect so that I wouldn't make her life any more stressful than it had to be, because she looked miserable and, you know, all that stuff. So
empathy.
So I tried to be perfect. And so I tried to find, well, what's the perfect answer to everything? Okay. So get good grades in school. So I did that. Graduate and go to college, get a job, be successful. That was the perfect plan that everyone said was the key to success. So I did all that. Then there was like wife and house and all this other stuff, a car and these things that I was supposed to do. So I did all that. And I was like, you know, I never bothered asking myself what I wanted to do. I even did crazy stuff. Like I never climbed a ladder, you know, most of my life, because I'm like, well, you can climb a ladder, you could fall and die. And I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm not going to do that. And it's dumb. And then I was with a roofer guy and he's like, climb the ladder. I'm like, aren't you worried about liability? And he's like, oh, shut up. Like, but are you climbing a freaking ladder? I was like, oh, okay. So I spent the last several years, or many years, I guess now, kind of trying to break down that I was living a life that was supposedly the right way to live based on what society said, or my family said, or someone else said. And I said, what do I want to do? I never bothered to ask that because I didn't really have an answer to it. And that's when I came up with the, well, if you don't know what you want, then you want to know what you want. And it's like, oh shit, I do have a want. So like, let me figure it out. And so you can go do research, you can kind of try different things, you have experiences. And for the last like year, for example, I did all these experiences. Well, okay, everyone seems to have fun going out to the beach or having fun doing all these excursions, or like going out doing riding jet skis, or I don't know, going to movies or doing these things. So I went and did all that stuff. I didn't really do a lot of stuff because I was saving money and doing all the stuff, but I just went and did all that. And so after a while, I was like, that's okay. I think I'm good though. And it was like, oh, well, you got to do this. You got to use the new apps like Tinder or whatever. It's like, you do that. It's like, okay, try that. So I'll do that. It's like, this isn't as great as everyone says. These things are like everyone's like, these things are cool. But it's just not me. I'm an introvert. I don't do partying, drinking, and that kind of stuff. So like, I'm just like, yeah, this wasn't working for me. So like, what did matter? So I like to write. I do the blog. I wrote the book. I like to work out. I like to eat food. So I was like identifying all these things. And so I'm starting to figure out my own life for myself and what I actually want. But I'm sorry, that's a long answer to your question. But the feedback that I was getting, I really love your pushback, because that pushback I got from one of your growing into it, like, just completely hit me. And I was like, oh man, I had fortunately a beautiful answer for three things. But like, I was like, that's a good question. So yours about like, oh, they said this and they say that. And I'm like, those are really interesting. And those are hard, right? And then you got to sit there and listen to this. It's like, oh, here's all these things. But the good news is that I did read all the study, all those philosophies, and I know that my eight things are compatible with them all. But yeah, I do have a couple of beefs here or there. Yeah. And it's usually semantics. And I find that whenever I say, oh, I have the beef here, they would like, oh, well, they don't really mean that. So it is. And I'm like, okay, well, then that just means that they're in line with me. So
yeah. Yeah. So I actually have given what you just said, I have a ninth tenet to meaning. And sure. I think this really, really places it together and really makes it like so much more meaningful to me, at least. Mm-hmm. Authenticity. You know, I really, really, I worried, and I didn't emphasize this on the podcast or even talk about it, but I have a fear. And one of my fears is that society one day is going to manufacture meaning. They're going to find the solution. They're going to find the equation for meaning. And when they achieve that, they're going to be able to use algorithms just like they use in data science and Facebook and all of literally everything that runs our daily lives. They're going to find the thing tailored to you that's going to give you the most meaning. And if they can hack, they've been able to hack everything else. They've been able to hack stimulation, dopamine, all of these things. But if they could hack meaning,
oh God,
man, that
You're scaring me because literally, if you wanted to hack meaning, you would take my eight elements of the book and you would optimize it. And that's literally what you do. Now I feel bad. I feel like I'm, what's the Oppenheimer? Is Oppenheimer the guy who made Manhattan Project where they dropped the bomb? I feel like Oppenheimer now. I feel like I just made a book that could be used to, because you can gamify life, right? Yeah. I mean, hell, The Sims showed that, right? It's like, like you're trying to have the people have experiences and grow. So yeah, basically my book is a codification for how to hack meaning. And in fact, that's why I wrote it. It's like, here, now you can go find meaning because you can, you know how it works and you just go do it. And you can find meaning in your life. So that's what was the point. I didn't realize it could be used for evil, but I guess it can be. The authenticity is really great. My book does cover about you to be true yourself and all that other fun stuff. I actually have a book I have in the hopper. I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know if I'm going to release it or not. It might just be the most boring thing in the world, but I actually have a book called Truth, right? It's actually a book called Truth. And I break down truth the same way I broke down the meaning of life, because everyone wants to know truth. But of course, just like my meaning of life book, I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm going to teach you how to understand the answer, and people are going to be super disappointed. Like, they weren't the meaning of life. Oh no, you're supposed to just tell me the answer. But I break down truth. And one of the elements of truth is authenticity, is to be true to yourself and true to others. True. That's why to that own self be true. That is literally authenticity, and it's actually going to be one of the tenets in there. But yeah, it is. I said the same thing about choice though. When my wife was the one who said choice, and I said, oh, it's built into all the other things. So I'm saying that answer to you now, knowing I might change my mind later. But but I do think I cover authenticity within it.
Well, that's the thing though. Well, it definitely just, it gives me a sense of peace, right? It gives me a sense of peace because in mythology, you know, stories, all of these things, one of the common themes is that they could get you so far. They could, like, Big Brother, you know, a tyrannical government. This is Star Wars to the T. It's, you know, they could go so far into you.
Those Australia pictures, yeah.
Yep. They could take everything, but they can't take that one part of you. They can't take that little aspect of you that makes you you. And no matter what, part of the human experience is figuring it out for yourself. And nobody will ever be able to take that from me. And you know what? That gives me so much, like, it gives me such a sense of, wow, okay, you know what? One day, even if somebody manufactures meaning for me, gives me, okay, you know what? Here is the perfect career. Imagine one day you say, okay, somebody says, here's the perfect career for you. And you are going to love this career. And here's your path laid out for you in life. Part of you is going to say, crap, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want to go on a self-discovery journey and figure out, you know what, this is exactly what I want, and I'm going to figure that thing out for myself. So, you know what, like, even though, like, I know, like, it's a thinker, but, like, in Brave New World, the book was basically about architecting this, like, you know, putting to the T and trying to discover, hack the human brain. And I think that there's just one part of the brain. There's one part of the human spirit that cannot be hacked. And then I'm free.
Well, it's funny because what I mentioned in the book, I talk about choice and the examples I give about not having choice. And I say, imagine that your entire life was an on rails. I don't remember what they call them. They're not roller coasters, but like the slow ones where like Pirates of the Caribbean, like the ride, like you're just on that slow ride, you're sitting there and you literally can't move. You're strapped in and you just see things that happen and there's nothing you can do. That if that was your entire life, you would be miserable. Yeah. And I give the other example I give is Clockwork Orange, where they literally held his eyelids open, being able to watch things and he literally couldn't look away. I said, those are two examples of having literal no control over your life. But I said, even in the worst of circumstances, I didn't stick with that. I just said, imagine that, that's terrible. But the worst of circumstances you can think of is prison, or slavery or some form of, like, you are trapped and there's literally nothing you can do. My argument in the book was that you can still make choices about two things, right? Where you put your attention and like what you think about, like, and so you can, even in prison, you can choose to like read a book, you can choose to do 100 push-ups, you can there are still things you can do, you can still grow as a person spiritually, you know, psychologically, however, intellectually, there's still ways you can grow in prison or in the worst of conditions. But I like this idea. I'm gonna ponder this. I'll probably sit in me for weeks before I have any kind of epiphany, because I will have to sit there and incubate. But
well that's the thing, you think about authenticity. Well, you think about it and you say, okay, you know what, Viktor Frankl, right? Or Alexander Solzhenitsyn, right? And both of these people, Viktor Frankl was in Auschwitz, Alexander Solzhenitsyn was in the gulags, right? The Russian gulags. And actually, this was something that Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote about. I really, really suggest you read The Gulag Archipelago. Just incredible. And some of the things that he says is, I'll give you one quote. He says, when you're getting tortured in the way that you're getting tortured in the gulags, the way that you have to think is that your body is no longer yours. You no longer have a body. Because if you still believe that you have a body, then they could hurt you. But if you allow them to do whatever they want with your body, because in reality, they can do literally whatever they want with your body. They could torture you whatever, in whichever way they'd like. If you believe that you are just soul, if you are just the non-material spirit that makes up your consciousness, then you have the chance to succeed. And, you know, Viktor Frankl said the same thing. He goes, there's a distance between stimulus and response. There is something that lies in between, and that is humanity. That is the nature of humanity itself. And, well, that literally makes us human. So part of meaning and part of pretty much every single thing that crafts up the human experience is, all right, how does this tailor to me, and not just whatever someone else wants me to do.
Yeah, I like that idea. I'm definitely gonna chew it over, the authenticity piece. And like I said, I literally, it was a weird thing. I was literally looking at that exact word yesterday, because I'm doing this like outline for the truth thing, and I was like, authenticity, and I was writing about it. So it's just a weird coincidence, but or not, you know, depending on people's philosophy. But but you know, that's really good stuff. And I'm definitely gonna chew on that in terms of how it kind of, I could talk about how it fits in. But I like the idea of being true to yourself, because ironically, that's one of the things that you know, I just didn't have an opinion on anything. It's just like, okay, what am I supposed to do? And I just sit there. I'm a weird person. The reason why the reason why I'm an interesting person to have written the book is that I function more like a robot. I have a little bit of I'm like really, really high on the autism spectrum, like Asperger's, like really high. So okay. I have a lot of the things that they do. Like I have trouble with like eye contact, and I talk too much about stuff no one cares about, stuff like that. And I can't tell when people are bored, so stuff like that. So I've a lot of those things. I've worked them out. I try to like find ways around them. But the one thing I have a problem is that I was mentioning about my robot brain. That's the part of my brain that's just like dispassionate, sitting there like a Vulcan going, well, that's interesting. And so like my brain works more like a computer than a human sometimes. And so I'm just sitting here, and like when I hang this thing up, the first thing I'm going to do is, okay, what do I do now? And I'm just going to be sitting here trying to give myself a reason to do something and trying to figure it out. And because I need a purpose to do anything. Like I can't go out. Like I have to play pool or do something when I'm out. I can't just stand and talk and drink alcohol. Like I just can't, because I'm just like, what am I supposed to be doing right now? Like I don't understand it. So like I have to go eat food. It's like that. I have to like give myself instructions. Even when I get out of bed, like it takes me a while to get out of bed in the morning, because I'm just like, okay, what am I supposed to do now? Like I'm just like trying to figure out what it is I'm supposed to be doing. And to self-direct, I think the great thing about having because I could get out of bed in 2 seconds if something forces me to, like, oh, I gotta call in a few minutes, or oh, I gotta go to school, or the bus is gonna leave, I gotta get up there. So like my entire life was directed by things that I was supposed to do. And then once I've moved in this self-directed life, I'm feeling a lot of difficulty in not finding, I have willpower and self-discipline when I have a goal, but I have a hard time at trying to figure out what the hell I'm supposed to be doing. So I don't know if it's an irony or whatever, but why I wrote a book on meaning. And then here I am, like, I literally need a meaning to do anything I do in life. And so I just find it really interesting that this idea, the authenticity, I guess it never even occurred to me, because, you know, what is it to be authentic? I'd have to know myself a little bit more. And apparently I don't, because I'm just like, oh, I'm going to go over here now because it's time to go eat. I don't know. Yeah. And well, so it's interesting.
First of all, I would argue that like that is excessively human, right? You say like, okay, that might be a symptom of Asperger's or something. That is excessively human, you know, like that is literally how the human motivational system is designed. Okay, you wake up in the morning and you're gonna lay there, you know. God, Carl Jung had a great quote. This blows my mind. Sorry, I'm giving you a bunch of quotes, but he said,
I never heard of it. Well, no, I heard of it, but I never actually read the Archipelago one, the Gulag Archipelago. I have to go check that one out. I did read Man's Search for Meaning, and I'm familiar with the Viktor Frankl, but I didn't know the other one.
Yeah, I know. Trust me. Literally, if like Man's Search for Meaning should be a required reading for human beings. But anyways, Carl Jung had a great quote. He said, "If it weren't for the leaping and twinkling of the soul, man would rot in his greatest passion, idleness." And I really think that's true. You know, like if we don't have anything that interests us, we're just going to sit and do nothing. And just, you know, you could call it sloth. You could also just call it being and just living and doing nothing, because there's nothing to do. You know, we're always making decisions on what is there to do. And if there is nothing to do, then we do nothing. And you know what?
That's true.
That is just a logical statement. Part.
I just think it's hilarious that I go so far as to kind of sit there and like, you know, waiting for input. Like, So any idea that comes to you, like, and anyone's like, oh, I had this inspired thought to do this, and I'm like, I've never had an inspired thought in my life. I'm just kind of sitting here like, well, I guess I guess I could do this now. Like, it's just so weird. So I get Forrest Gump. I'm very much like that.
I've come to the conclusion that I am Forrest Gump to a very, very strong degree. And by Forrest Gump, obviously, I mean just serendipitously just walking throughout the world and just be acting and being completely lost, because, okay, you know what? I know how to get to class. Class is right over there and I could walk to class. Okay, that's fine. And part of that is exactly what you were saying. I'm very good at managing the little things. Okay, you know what? If I have to get this done for the next 30 minutes, I'm going to get this done for the next 30 minutes. And that's the way that humans are wired, or at least disciplined people are wired. Okay, great. I have control over these small things. But then you ask me the question of, what is the meaning of life? Or you ask me the question of, okay, you know what? What are you going to do with your life? Where are you going to end up in 5 years? And how the hell are you going to get there? Yeah. Well, then I become Forrest Gump. Then I become the person that literally has no idea what I'm doing, stumbling throughout the world and asking myself, okay, you know what? Should I try to take control over it? And I've been asking myself that question for so long, because obviously, shouldn't the answer be yes, right? Shouldn't the answer be, okay, yes, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to, okay, in 2 years, I'm going to be the managing executive of this, or my podcast is going to be this big, and in 5 years, I'm going to be here, and 10 years, I'm going to be here. Or I could just be like, wherever life takes me, man, whatever opportunities present themselves. And to some degree, no, I think that is completely right. I think there's nothing right about creating a plan. And well, maybe a few contingency plans, but it's like 99% right in the opportunity part, partially because when you decide to focus on something, right, this plan, by definition, you ignore the rest of the world, because that is the nature of focus. When you're focused on your phone, you're ignoring the rest of the world. You're ignoring any potential better opportunity. You're ignoring your own meaning drives that are telling you, you know what, maybe you should pull yourself off the path. And I'll give you the perfect example of this. Yeah. Somebody who makes all the money in the world, you know, and it's the typical, you know, it's a movie trope where you reach the end, you're like, oh yes, you know, my 20s, I'm building wealth and getting all of these things. And then by the time that you make all the money, you sit there and you say, wow, that didn't really feel as good as I thought it was going to be. And you see that in the movie Soul, and literally my close adult friend, we'll call him just, you know, to dad's parent and dad's friend. And, you know, like when you really go there, he goes, I watched that movie Soul and it just hit me. I had that same exact feeling. I had that same exact feeling in my life where I said, you know what? God, I focused so hard. I grinded. I became hyper focused on this one thing. And then I realized, holy crap, that was not worth it. Yeah. And well, that's part of it, you know.
Do you have time for one more cool story? It's a good one to leave you with personally, because it's actually a story about how I figure out what I actually like doing with my life, and I think it might be helpful at some in college.
Perfect. And then we'll promise to end it because you know, we could do this forever.
So and a side note, fun thing about what you just said, scientifically, Dan Gilbert Dan Gilbert, you heard of manufactured happiness? You gotta look that up. I think it's Dan Gilbert. He said you either can change your mind, or you'll commit and be happy. Your brain will manufacture happiness. And he did this study where he did a picture where it's like you could choose two portraits, right? And you can pick, or from a bunch, I don't remember. Pick a portrait. You pick a portrait, you take it home, and there were two scenarios. One scenario was you take it and that's it, and the other one is you take it, you can change your mind a week later. Okay. And so they checked the happiness after from the people who committed and the people who didn't commit, and the people who committed were happier. And there's nothing different. I mean, that's obviously same situation, just like you didn't get to change your mind. And why? Because your brain becomes attached to the thing you have, because you know you have it and you're like, oh, it's great. But if you get to change your mind, you second guess it and you don't manufacture that happiness. They're like, oh, well, yeah, maybe I want to change my painting or whatever. And so you actually, so the great, and I know that sucks. It's like, oh, so if you commit and you don't give yourself choices, you're happier. And that's a lot of the paradox of choice. I might be convincing with the Barry guy who did the paradox of choice as well, because they're kind of similar insights. But I think it was Dan Gilbert, because he did the manufactured happiness, I think. But they're the same.
Sure, we'll go with it.
But the great news, I change that to say, look, there's great news. You can either change your mind or you'll be happy if you can't. And it's a beautiful thing, a beautiful way. But anyway, so last thing. Cute story. So I try to figure out what I want to do with my life, and I couldn't figure out. And what happened was I went to college. I majored in the most generic thing possible. I started in management, and then I went to finance because you had to be smart. You had to be smart to go into finance. I hated all my finance. I fell asleep in all my finance courses. Then I took psychology as a minor in my last semester, and I got straight A's, and I was raising my hand, and everything was awesome. And I was talking to the psychology major, and I kid you not, true story, I said, oh, I really love psychology, and this business thing is kind of boring, but I'm you know, I get good grades because I'm smart. And he said, go into business. there's no money in psychology. I kid you not, he said that. Then you can go, you can always go back to school and go and get all this stuff in psychology when you're older. And so I did that. So I was like, okay. I mean, I didn't listen to it, but I was going to do it anyway. So I was just like, it's not bad. But so I went to, my starting out at work was a freak accident. So I was out of work for 2 months. I graduated a semester early. I graduated in the fall of 2003. I was supposed to graduate in the spring of 2004. Whoops. I had enough credits to graduate in the fall. like how do you accidentally graduate? I literally accidentally graduated. I kid you not, a true story. So I'm like, oh shit. So that's why I thought I actually only needed one credit to grad. I could have graduated in 3 years. I actually just needed, not one credit, three credits, one class.
Yeah.
So wow. I ended up stacking my whole semester with psychology courses to fill it out. Greatest thing ever. But I graduated in December and I had no job lined up because I wasn't supposed to graduate till spring. So I was out of work and God knows how it happened. Again, spiritually, whatever, or if it's just luck, I don't care. It happened. I put my stuff on, you know, Career Builder or Monster, all the stuff back then. I know we have Indeed now, but that didn't exist back then. And I got a call from Young Ai Lee. I'll never forget her name. Young Ai Lee. She was the recruiter for Corporate Executive Board, which became CEB, which got acquired by Gartner. I work for Gartner now. So other than a 2-year stint somewhere else, I've been there my entire career. And she interviewed me. It was a research position. So I did that. And it's research and advisory. So I do research on what the best companies do. And then I advise leaders on what the best practices are.
I love that.
And that's basically how it works. So I've advised executives for almost 18 years now.
Wow.
Here's the part that's applicable to you. So I kept saying, because there was this thing that you went to corporate executive board. First of all, people thought it was a front for the CIA. It sounded like a bullshit, like a bullshit company, because it was in DC, it was in Washington, DC. But that's just a front for the CIA, isn't it? And so I went there and everyone was like, oh, I'm going to go. I asked people what they were going to do. Yeah, I was trying to like figure out what other people were doing, see if there's something I can glean from it. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I'm going to go there for 2 years. I'm going to go back to business school and I'm going to figure out what I really want to do. I'm like, okay, so I'm going to be here for 2 years. I'm going to go back to, or 2 to 3 years, I'm going to go back to business school and then I'll figure out what I really want to do, right? Because I'm just here by blind luck. So I do that. I go there for 2 years. I kept getting promoted. So every time I got promoted, I'm like, well, I'm getting paid more money. I don't need to go back to school if I'm getting paid more money now, do I? So like, okay, I'll wait another 2 years and I'll go back to business school. So whenever my career stalls, I'll go back to business school. And there was a leap. There was a leap at like consultant project manager where you couldn't cross. So I was like, okay, that's probably the end point even then. But I made that leap. So they like, okay, well, now, so I kept going. I had never been to business school because I kept getting promoted. I kept moving on my career and I kept making a truck ton of money. And there was no need to, because the business school was really just to do the thing. But I kept asking myself, oh, okay. I keep saying, oh, I'm just going to, every time I get promoted, I'm going to put off thinking about what I'm really going to do with my life for a couple of years. And I'm like, okay, you know, at some point I'm going to be too old to change, you know, career. I mean, you're never too old, but you know what I mean? Like I can't like go and do 20 years once you're 60. So like, obviously I have to figure something out. And I asked myself, okay, I got to think of this logically. I got to figure out some sort of system to understand what I want to do. I don't understand how to figure out what I want to do. And that's actually what my my chapter is in an X Factor is about, actually, coincidentally. But I asked myself, I said, what do I like to do? I was like, what do I do in my free time? What do I choose to do? What would I choose to do? What do I actually do when I enjoy it? And I was like, wait a second. I my spare time, I'm like, I'm reading books, I'm doing all this stuff. Like, so I'm learning, I'm learning. And then I like to talk to other people about the things I've learned. So I like to learn. I like to teach. And I was like, wait a second, what do I do on my job now? Researcher, advisor. I mean, let me reword those words. Researcher is a learner and an advisor is a teacher. And I was like, oh shit. I literally do the thing I was meant to do in my life as my job, with absolutely no effort or anything on my part. I just fell into it by random chance. Or if you're a spiritual person or a religious person, somebody was looking out for me, or I was thinking the right thoughts or whatever. But whatever happened, I actually found out that I actually was in the job I was supposed to do. And the only thing that I would do other than what I do right now is literally the book that I wrote, where I would do, speaking gigs and advisories and podcasts for the rest of my career, because I would be learning and teaching about stuff that's even more interesting. I mean, I teach data analytics, enterprise architecture, that kind of stuff. It's great, but do I really, 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 really care about enterprise architecture versus anything else? No, that's just where I was. So, and IT is the cool stuff, and data is the new frontier. So that's what I cover, because it's the, you know, it's like my finance degree. It's the thing I, you know, it's, you got to be smart to do it. But this thing is really cool. I love talking about philosophy, psychology, how things work with that regard, so that I can help people live a more meaningful life. So that's the only other thing I would do. If it does take off, I could retire and do that. But I tell you that story, that long ass story, because it's really cool. The idea that you're right. You let it go, enjoy the journey, do all that stuff. And sometimes things just somehow magically work. I don't understand how that worked. How I got a random call. I didn't apply for the job. Someone named Brooke referred me to get the referral bonus, because you got $500 for a referral bonus back then for referring, and they stayed on. I never got treated to lunch or anything from this Brooke person. Maybe she left before she got paid the $500. And I don't even know if Brooke exists. As soon as I joined, I tried to find a Brooke to see if I could say, hey, is there a Brooke here who
Brooke,
who
also known as me? God. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was like, I want to know who Brooke is so that I could thank her. And then I think it was a woman. Brooke is hopefully a female name. But then I was like, I'd like to thank her, but I also want to make her take me out to lunch for making her $500. But to this day, I don't know who Brooke is. I never applied to CEB or corporate executive board at the time. And I'm still there because I happen to be in the exact thing I'm if there's such a thing I'm being meant to do, that's what I'm good at. So I don't know if that helps you. It's a fun way to end it, but it's exactly what you said. So I had to tell you the story.
So basically, I'm no longer calling you Nathaniel. I'm no longer calling you Nathaniel Garrett Novacell. I'm calling you Forrest Gump. And we are both Forrest Gumps.
We're a couple of Forrest Gumps.
We're just a couple of Forrest Gumps. And we're just run, Forrest, run. We're running, but we have no idea where we're going. And I kind of like that.
It works out and we're happy for it. So
I love it. Thank you, dude. Like, awesome. Really, really awesome. This was like, you know, there are like levels of great conversations. And this was like towards the top. You know, like I have like normal podcasts and then I have meaningful podcasts. And this... Well, you succeeded. You created a meaningful podcast here. So thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Nick Lugo Show with Nathaniel Garrett Novacell. To support this podcast, please give me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to my YouTube channel. And so I'll leave you with a quote from Viktor Frankl himself in the book, Man's Search for Meaning. Ultimately, man should not ask what the meaning of his life is, but rather must recognize that it is he who is asked. In a word, each man is questioned by life. And he can only answer to life by answering for his own life. To life, he can only respond by being responsible. Thank you, and I hope to see you next time.